People are fascinating, and I love talking to them. This is The Social Ramp with me, James Faulkner. Hello, universe. Are you listening? Hello, folks. How you doing? Today on the podcast, I'm doing the beginning of a 5-part series joined by Dallas Brody, who, as you know, is one of my favorite lawyers and a super smart cookie. The first of 5 episodes is centered around cancel culture, its effects, and how destructive it is to society in general. We talked about systemic problems and current issues here in Canada, and also what the overall effect of all this is. So, if you'd like to be entertained and somewhat informed, give it a listen. Here we go with the fearless and brilliant lawyer, Dallas Brody. Let's go. Dallas, you're back again.
Hi, James. It's great to see you.
You too, and more officially now, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is cool.
This is cool. We're starting something new here tonight.
We are. So this is our, I don't want to say a test because I know you'll kill it, but it's more like, I just wanted to feel if it was like a sort of a you and me talking about a topic. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of cool for us to be able to do.
I think it is. And I think the good part is you and I have some different viewpoints on things as well, which will give it some dynamism and interest, inflection. And I also think that you and I are interested in a lot of the same topics.
Yeah.
And like totally. To dive into them in a little bit more detail than we're able to do in the average dinner time conversation.
We get to have we've got some olives, got some wine, we got some bread. It's kind of like a religious ceremony.
I know, I never want to leave.
It's funny, I was talking to my mom and she's like, I love Dallas. I used to listen to her on the Ralph Mayer show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is it Rick Mayer or Ralph?
It was Rafe Mayer, actually.
Oh, Rafe, yeah, okay.
But that's okay. I think it was shortened to Rafe because actually in Scottish it's spelled Ralph, but he didn't like being called Ralph. So it was Rafe Mayer. Yeah. She liked him, and I liked working with Rafe, actually.
Well, it's kind of cool. So, you know, and then I listened to you on the radio the other day.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. I was on with John Daly on his show called Back on the Beat.
Yeah.
Which is his Saturday morning show at 10 o'clock on CKNW. And I was on that show talking about, well, I don't want to divert off this, but my concerns about Vancouver City Councillor Jean Swanson giving out free drugs last week.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're talking about cancel culture today. And so is this like a move to try and cancel her?
Actually, that's a very interesting question, right?
Well, I think there's a big difference between, hey, I don't want to hear this person anymore. And then there is somebody needs to be accountable for what they do. And I'm willing to have a conversation. Two different things. And I think that's kind of what it is, right?
I think what might separate the average situation of like one situation I know of about a cancellation that happened in a circle of friends of mine is someone who worked at a local company that's very big and happened to do a thumbs up to what was considered a politically incorrect comment. And that company got bombarded within seconds of thousands of abuse of this person. And nothing had even been said except for a thumbs up. And it was over for him.
Wow.
And this is someone who had been at a company for a long time. And that was it. You got to go. They're mobbing us. We're being bombarded. We're so sorry, but you have to go. And this person, so I would distinguish between a situation like that. I could get onto the whole notion of why would you possibly be tweeting from a company thing anyway? And why are people tweeting anyway from their place of business? But that's a whole other topic. But when someone like Jean Swanson, who's actually an elected public official, who's purposely stepped into the political scene and run for office and is in a position of public trust, I think there is greater repercussion for people who do things like in this case, where she clearly is in violation of the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act of Canada. And everything she did that day fell into the definition of trafficking.
Yeah.
And if James Faulkner went out on the street right now and started handing out packages of heroin, methamphetamine, and cocaine,
yeah,
you'd be arrested.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
And you would rightfully be arrested because those are controlled substances, and that's the way it is right now. You know, and she did this, and now people are saying, well, her whole point was to get arrested. Well, you know, maybe she should be, and maybe she should get charged and sent and have a trial and get convicted and look at the sentence she's facing. I don't think that was an appropriate way to do this. She has no idea where those drugs came from, what they were cut with. They said they had tested them, but really this is a stunt that I think went into the range of being completely reckless and brazen. It was out front of the police station.
Mm-hmm.
But this attention-seeking behavior by her is not new.
Right.
You know, so, you know, canceling what people have been doing is writing to Premier Horgan and asking David Eby and Adrian Dix, a health minister, to publicly speak out against this and say, no, we don't want you giving out free drugs. And other people aren't allowed to do it either.
Right.
She's a member of the Order of Canada, which is one of the really the highest honor in the land. Is this, and they have termination policies. Conrad Black lost his Order of Canada because he was convicted of a criminal offense. So there are two reasons. Either you're convicted of a criminal offense or you've done things that are out of the range of normal expected decorum. There's better wording than that, but.
So, I mean, I think to underscore sort of the theme of this podcast, obviously it's about cancel culture and everyone's going to see this from the title, but I think that the main difference here is that, you know, you're identifying a wrongdoing that is significantly a wrongdoing. And there isn't a, hey, we want to cancel you. It's, hey, listen, you can't do this. People need to understand that you can't do this. And these tactics have to stop. This isn't, there's not some mob showing up and is going to cancel City Hall.
No.
Right. And so City Hall has to then make a change because that's what the corporate structure of, like the example you were talking about your friend
mm-hmm.
or the person that you knew in that company, that's what City Hall is. And Gene is part of City Hall. So that would mean that a whole bunch of people would get together and basically say, I'm not paying my taxes
right.
unless you get rid of this person. That's the canceled tactic, right?
Yeah, that's about right.
Right. So, and that isn't happening though. So what you're dealing with the people who do pay their taxes and are saying, no, we don't hire you to do that, which right. is a completely different thing. So, and the reason I say this is because I think we need to draw attention to the cast of characters that are trying to cancel people and the people who are trying to have the right things happen and are open to a conversation because that's the difference. You're an intelligent woman. You want to go, look, you can't do this. You did something illegal. And if it comes down to you actually getting arrested for doing this, then so be it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. And just like if, I don't know, Kennedy Stewart decided to make a point by going down the street and smashing car windows in.
It would be the
That's
same.
Also against the law.
Right, is it?
And I mean, I know that if I walk down the street to make a point that Gene Swanson shouldn't have done this, so now Dallas Brody is going to go down and smash car windows to just say, well, if she gets to do it, I get to do it, I'm sure I'd get arrested. Right?
Absolutely.
I think if I went right outside right now and smashed windows, I'd get arrested. And I could say, but I'm just trying to make a point that people are sick of crime. Tough beans, Miss Brody, you're still getting arrested. Right?
Well, there seems to be some kind of a we can talk about this a little bit later, but it seems that there is a rising up from the lower middle. Okay. And it's sort of the inmates running the asylum kind of situation we have here because the people who try and cancel people, I don't know where they all come from, but they're typically not the people who are running companies, starting things, taking risks, who are in ultimate places of power that would be traditionally, let's say 20 years ago, considered power. I guess this is the new power, I suppose. This is the opposition new power of, you know, the social new power or whatever you want to call it, these group of people. But it's a whole different thing when you have people who don't want to talk and they just want to say a few things in mass and the conversation to end. And that the conversation needs to continue. This is when instead of just saying, hey, shut up, never talk again, there needs to be, hey, listen, we want to talk about this. Let's have a conversation, become a culture together who can work out problems. But that's not happening.
That's not happening. It would be the most horrible dinner party of the universe. Let's have a dinner party and someone says something that someone disagrees with and half the table throws their buns at them and gets up and leaves.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
I mean, it's just a bun throwing. And then they bury them in buns and that's the end of it.
And then the host at the end says, you said that you ruined the party because the people threw the buns.
Right.
You can't come to a party again.
There you go.
That's
it.
Yeah.
And that person is forever demonized. And so I think to myself, well, why? What's happening too is the realm of conversation is becoming narrower and narrower and narrower. The words you can use, the topics you can broach, the opinions you're allowed to have. It's getting so that unless you stay within this very, very narrow bandwidth, you're in big trouble. And coming back to your notion of all the people who are the so-called mob that comes after you, I'm not convinced there are this vast ocean of people. There are organizations that have one person set up with 50 different online tweeter names.
Right. Okay.
And so they can sit there and they're organized and away they go. And so that person thinks that 4,000 people have tweeted them, but really it may only be two people.
Right. And it also could be this, the trolling and also the Internet Research Agency and all that sort of stuff that happened with you're talking about other countries with, trying to influence, trying to turn ourselves on each other.
Yes.
That kind of stuff. So you can't really tell this just because a whole bunch of people show up at Twitter and tweet something and say, we're going to cancel, not show up at your retail location or your store or whatever it is, doesn't mean they're real people. It's not actually a person with a picket sign outside your front door. It seems like it is, but from a proof of self, proof of identity, you actually don't actually know it is, even though they have legitimate or seemingly legitimate names by a first and a last name and a profile and a photo. But hey, I mean, they're making music now out of using AI by saying, here, make a song from AC/DC and they will make one that's never been heard before with new lyrics and it can make an AC/DC song. So are you trying to tell me you can't like generate a human's avatar photo on a Twitter profile? It's easy.
Easy.
Right? So, I mean, this stuff is so simple. The problem is it's and let's just chat about this, is that in order to, you couldn't cancel someone from years ago before this technology was here. It didn't really work as easily, right?
No.
So, I was listening to, there's a funny bit that Ricky Gervais has about Twitter. It's amazing. He's like, I don't know if you've seen this bit, but it's so, so good. He's like, people who don't like something on the internet, he says it's like going up, having a sign in the middle of a town square that says guitar lessons. And somebody comes up and starts yelling, well, I don't fucking want guitar lessons in front of everyone. It's true.
It's true.
The whole town doesn't need to know this.
No.
That one person doesn't want to play guitar.
No.
So that's kind of what...
Nobody cares.
It's kind of what goes. So yeah, I hate to like plagiarize something that he said, but, and I made a huge mess of that, but that's kind of the thing and it makes sense, right? So let's figure out just for a second here, sort of the origins of this, of canceling people. I mean, I looked at one thing and there was... The term canceled, I found from something which was like somebody did something in a VH1 video interview where they said, hey, you've been canceled. And it was like a quote. And then I think the word cancel sort of departed from you are and then just cancel, 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 and that's cancel culture. So I think that that kind of took off. And then when we look at some of the, and Joe Rogan was talking about this, which matter of fact, there was an article, I sent it to you, that the general media is very worried because Joe Rogan is too big to cancel.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
Because, you know, he does right his own ship when he knows he's made a mistake, which is cool.
Yeah.
And he has made a few and he's owned up to them, which you should give everyone the opportunity to do that. Everyone makes mistakes. But he was saying that, who was that guy from Breitbart? Was it Milo Yiannopoulos?
Yep, Milo Yiannopoulos.
Okay, and that's like one of the main, like, you know, outspoken people who were just saying stuff that was like, you know, radioactive that basically just got canceled.
Yeah.
And on a technology basis, the platforms just got rid of all this stuff, right? So those assets, you think, you know, you're mortalized or immortalized by having content out there like this podcast. Will it be out there forever? Well, if I say the wrong thing, Apple's going to take this off.
Yeah.
Right? Or if I have something on YouTube, YouTube will say, no, that's, you know, this type of content has to go. And if you keep violating, they delete your profile. So the platforms have to exist because, you know, the Ricky Gervais scenario, you can't just get rid of the town. The problem is the town lives electronically now. And companies own those towns,
yeah,
those electronic forums, platforms, et cetera. So we're in this time where it's the perfect storm. We don't know who is talking on the internet. There are platforms that are owned by censorship people who, from Google, who obviously owns YouTube and Apple, and they all have to do the right thing because their employees will leave.
I know this is
YouTube's employees will leave if they don't do that. Then this is the weird part, right? This is the rising up of this middle. Now,
the impetuous children who are coming up and like screaming and saying, "Unless you do what we say, we are going to eat you alive." And it's like they're the kids. And there's no sense of rank. They just do a big mutiny and say, this is what we're going to do. And sometimes I wonder, well, why doesn't the employer just say, okay, go? Like part of me is like, this cancel culture is working because everybody's caving into it.
That's true, yeah.
And if you said, cancel me as much, like, fine. Just try it. And take your lumps. And people started standing firm and interlocking arms and saying, no, it's not going to work anymore. That would spread too. And if people decided to support companies that were being hosed by some cancel thing, people could fight back with their own dollars. Because I don't really believe, like I haven't gone to one group of people that actually says, I really like cancel culture. Have you ever heard someone say that?
No.
So how many people are really into this? I think that what you said just a few minutes ago about the right to make mistakes, get some feedback, everybody's really mad at you. It's like, John Horgan said something about recently during that heat wave. Look, fatality is a part of life. And that is a very true statement. Mm-hmm. Dying is an inexorable part of existence,
yeah,
right? And in heat waves, people do die. They've been dying all over the world from heat waves forever. I mean, we've always getting the reports from India and these places where it's super hot, they die. And they've died here and people do die. And these things happen. But he got so beaten up over that. I thought that was really unfair, but mm-hmm. instead of just like, he didn't really get canceled cause he's the premier and he'd have to get elected out for that kind of thing. But he should have the right to say, look, I said that in a brash way. I should have said it more delicately. I didn't mean it to sound harsh. I was trying to say, you guys, look, no matter what I do from here in Victoria, I'm not going to be able to save or fix every single person who got overwhelmed by the heat last week.
Yeah.
Which is true. But so I would like a world back where people are allowed to make mistakes and take it back if they want to. And if they don't want to, then that should be their right too. But we're destroying public dialogue through this. Huge swaths of opinion are not being heard. And sometimes I wonder how they're picking what's allowed to be said and what's not allowed to be said. Who's making these decisions?
Well, that's so. Where do you always have to look at? And I don't have the answer to this. But if you were to diagnose a problem, you have to figure out what the kernel is. Like, what's that one little thing? What was the seed? And then who spread the seed? And then who has all? Who knows? Hey, as soon as we plant a seed, we have all these people with watering cans who are going to make it grow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very coordinated.
Yes. And I would agree with that.
Because, I mean, you're sort of in... So I'm going to write this book in a couple of years. And I think this is where we're at right now, which is part of all of this, is that from an average point of view, it's our own brand and our own idea of who we think we are, because we've all been told we're all brands, apparently, personal brand, all this stuff, right? Hmm. We all think we're a representation of some kind of a thing, a character. You know, it doesn't matter what clothes we wear, what car we drive, where we live. These are all markers and signals that we're X. Wow. That's who we think we are, right? So that... When we're losing meaning in our life of what we represent and brands and all that kind of stuff becomes to start to feel dirty and too much like it's a feeling of I've been manipulated by brands to wear X and you've seen it in the fashion now. If you look at the way that 14, 15-year-old girls, and you can always see this in fashion. Fashion is a reflection of culture, and they want to be nondescript. They want to wear baggy clothes. They want jeans that have no shape, so they can't, you know, they're not, you know, overly, overtly sexy or anything like that. And it's basically about shedding the identity. I want to be nondescript. I don't want to be anything.
Yes.
The problem with that is humans need meaning. If you start to strip away and vanillaize yourself, you're going to have to need meaning somehow. So what's the next thing? Well, why don't I grab on to signaling what I believe in? Now, what I believe in is dangerous because you're talking about people who don't know a lot and that are given sound bites of information via small pieces of media.
Yeah.
Right? When I say small pieces, I mean they only read the first 50 words. Right, which isn't the whole story. That's clickbait, most of it, and they think that's the truth. So you end up with this narrative of people who are trying to add meaning to their life, who grab onto virtue signaling to be able to step into. Yes, I'll jump on that because I want to add meaning on my Instagram profile or my Twitter profile that I stand for something because I've just vanillaized myself for the past 2 years that I don't have anything I stand for. So now I need to fill up that bucket.
It's a really good point.
So we're in this and we don't know what we're doing. This is the internet and social networks is honestly like an AK-47 that we don't know we have our finger on the trigger. And we're firing bullets. We don't even know where they're going. Like it really is. I think we're in for a rude awakening. And I hope that it is the reversal of canceling people, and it's more like, let's have an open dialogue. Let's just talk about this. That's what podcasts are actually doing. And it's kind of interesting how these are all sort of, opening some sort of form for a conversation.
Well, I think, for example, we used to depend on, you know, frankly, places like CBC to have roundtable discussions and allow points of view. But our public broadcaster, for example, I don't see them doing that anymore. And, you know, there might be two conservative voices, maybe Rex Murphy. I don't even know if he's with CBC anymore, but there's nobody really, like if you listen to the average broadcast, there's very narrow bandwidth as to what they allow on the air there. And because everybody there thinks the same way. And it's no surprise that they're shocked to think that people have other opinions when they don't meet any other people who have those opinions. And I also think that it's when the broadcaster stops having the roundtable discussions where there can be a true let's use Canadian example, NDP, liberal, conservative thought,
yeah,
then the podcast is really the only place where people are desperate to connect and to hear other points of view and to try and understand where those people are coming from. I've always been able to tolerate listening to someone else's point of view. In fact, you know, I'm definitely more conservative, but I most of my friends for a long time were liberals. I was the most conservative of my friends, but I was always around liberals. Always going, oh, Dallas, you know, da-da-da. And I mean, you know, okay. But, you know, I didn't try and, you know, cancel them or scream at them and or storm out of the dinner party kind of thing. I think that the podcast really is the only place where people are allowed to speak anymore. I mean, weren't you talking to me about one that's called All In?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Let's talk about that one for a minute
I have a note on it, actually.
Okay.
So I was listening to it today. It was pretty awesome. I mean, they're from California, right? Mm-hmm. And they're all venture capital people. They're all, you know, internet tycoons, basically.
Lots of money.
Lots of money. So they, you know, they can just be outspoken and they don't hold back. I mean, it's, so there's one thing that they were talking about in terms of, because California is sort of going through the same thing that, you know, that we are here in terms of this whole canceling. It's really bad down there. But they were talking about cynicism and the myth that cynicism came from people who are actually bright or considered, you know, more intelligent than others. And that's actually not the fact.
Really?
So, you know, Chamath is one of the guys in the podcast, and there was a poll done, because he cited some source, but you have to go back to that and listen to it. But he said that people who are cynical typically have lower literacy, lower numeracy, and lower IQ.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So you go, and this sort of dovetails into this, like...
Because hold on that one point, because people who are cynical often think that they're a know-it-all.
Right.
Oh, come on. That's not really what's... You couldn't believe in that, Dallas, or, you know, it does shut down a lot of conversation. Like, why bother exploring any idea or being optimistic about anything if someone's going to say, oh, come on. Give me a break. That's not the way the world works, or that cynicism that really does shut things down really quickly.
Well, I was listening to you on the radio the other day, and I can understand why people like who would try and cancel someone would not want to have a conversation with you. Mm-hmm. Because you would be exhaustingly correct to the point they wouldn't have the stamina to be able to endure it. Because they would get to a certain, they don't have enough depth to continue it. They can say a few statements and they're hoping it's a mic drop moment for them. But when they get into an actual conversation with, they don't want to have it because they'll know they'll lose.
That's the whole, in my view, that's the root of the entire thing.
It is. So I listen to you on the radio and, you know, John Daly, I mean, he's got a show and all that kind of stuff. But I was going, are you going to challenge, like, is this going to really, if it didn't seem like, you just kept having these great points, great points, great points. And I thought it'd be nice to sort of have a little bit more. You kept serving pretty hard shots. Mm-hmm. If this was a tennis game, it'd be kind of boring because I'd be like, is the person on the other end of the court can actually hit the ball back with the same pace?
Yeah.
You know?
I've asked for example, to be brought on the air with, for example, with Save Our City. I mean, people know I'm involved with Save Our City, and that's why I was on there, to get on the air with some of these, what I call the drug advocates. Garth Mullen, Sarah Blythe, Trey Helton, Karen Ward. Why don't you come on the air with me? Come on the air, and let's let a host have us on the air, and let's go. You bring your ideas about why giving out drugs, more and more and more and more drugs, followed by naloxone, 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 more and more drugs, naloxone, naloxone, is a good plan. And I would like to go at that with you. Mm-hmm. And talk to you about the numbers, the stats, my opinion of what should happen. And I'd like you to answer why my opinions are bad. Instead of just trying to take me out with some hit job, which I've already experienced from certain media outlets, and I won't mention those right now. But yeah. I mean, there is a campaign to try and get anybody who goes against the accepted narrative smeared, taken out. It's a hit. And the whole idea is to make that person toxic and cancel them. Or like I'm a frustrating target for people because you can't cancel me. Right. I'm at an age and stage where I don't work for someone and you can't cancel me. Like the guys on All In. You can try and cancel me till the cows come home. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to stop talking what I believe to be my truth and what I believe needs to be said. And I believe that there are people out there who feel represented by what I say, just like there are people represented by what they say.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that their views get to outweigh mine or what my viewpoint represents or Save Our City. We have a valid right to be in this public conversation. And right now, seriously, Scott, James, it's like pulling teeth to get into, like, CBC for sure. Mm-hmm. There's a complete wall up.
Hey, who's Scott? Scott's in your mind.
And I'm like, you know what?
That doesn't sound like me.
Yeah, I know.
I used to, I should change my name to Scott. It's going to get some more attention from me.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me.
Okay, let's just look at this for a second. So those names that you mentioned, I mean, obviously you're in a direct, you know, crossfire with them. Mm-hmm. But I think you kind of got to look at it from the way they see and feel, right? They think they're doing something good.
Yeah.
So, and in the circles that they chat with and the echo chambers that they're in, mm-hmm. and the job they do, they think they're doing good.
Yes, they do.
So, and this is the hard part, right? Like, I mean, when you're, I mean, there's always the two perspectives. The one is, hey, you know, I'm walking down the street and a drug addict comes out of nowhere and, you know, gets close to me with a needle. Okay. There's that. And then there's watching somebody almost dead and stares in your eyes. Same person, same thing. Totally different human impact you're going to get. The first one, you're going to be like, get out of my way, you're dangerous. The second one is, my God, a human being's dying. So they are on the second one. Mm-hmm. They're on that because, and perhaps the organizations they represent or whatever it is, they're all about, and it's not necessarily a narrative. It's not a scripted thing. They're fighting for that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but the problem is they need to play fair and have proper conversations and have a dialogue with you. But the problem is I don't know that they're going to be able to achieve the ends that they're trying to achieve in a logical world.
That's the problem.
So if you...
Because it's irrational to say that a policies that have been pursued for 20, 25 years now, where in 2000 we had 170 deaths per year and we're up to, what, 1,700 per year? It's not working. So the facts actually don't support the policies. There needs to be room for more ideas to come into the dinner table. And I think that part of it is like, conservatives, I mean, I know that this has been said a million times, but conservatives tend to measure compassion by the outcome of a policy. What's the end result of it? Have we gotten this many people back into their lives, off their addiction, back to their families, back to their kids, whatever, all the people who loved them? That would be an outcome that's positive. But my view is that the addiction advocates see compassion as just helping them right now, here in this minute.
Yeah, no, there's no long game at all.
Right, and the long game takes patience.
Oh, it takes leadership too. That's the other part.
For sure, leadership.
You have to run it like a company. If you have any sort of assembly line, you can have a factory that's doing things, but unless you're like, there is a vision for a product or there's a vision for something, this is just an assembly line of a machine that just keeps churning over and nothing works. And that's kind of what we have. We've got this, we don't even know what we're trying to do. And we're just trying to, it's such a myopic point of view.
And it's myopic because the other side is having a hard time getting through and heard because it's being drowned out. And people who try and say things that are outside the accepted conversation, like I've tried to throw a few ideas on the table, you're like lambasted. Oh, you said this. Oh my gosh. Oh, you're a terrible person. It's like, wow. Like, what about my life and me as a person and my life, my work, everything I've done makes me a terrible person? It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
But there's a championing, because that's not even a word, championing, yeah, of being the person who wins, right? The I won an argument, that kind of thing, that I think this the cancel culture tries to go, we won, mm-hmm. the other person lost. The problem with that is, though, is that there all it is talk. It's not actually real. So, for instance, if in sports, if I were to say to you, let's say you and I are in sports together, right? Mm-hmm. And you say to me, no, I'm the champion. And I'm like, no, I'm the champion. Okay, so, well, how do we figure out who's the champion? Well, we figure out who's best. Okay, so we go and play the game or whatever that sport is, and whoever wins, wins. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then one person can say they're a champion, but they don't even want to play. No. So they're just saying they're champion, and you're not. You're a loser. You lost. You didn't even actually play yet. So have...
That's exactly right.
Have the game, and the game is open dialogue. This is what media should be. There should be a TV show that has you and Garth and whoever on,
yeah.
and you're discussing it. But the problem is that can't happen because the minute that there's an antithetical point of view of trying to save drug addicts, the people won't show up to film it.
Right. That's exactly right. So you get canceled not
because they're
the...
supporting.
Correct.
So this is this rise of the middle who won't show up to a tech company, won't show up to film something because they feel their organization doesn't support the right point of view. So this is dangerous.
It's dangerous particularly because it's the media doing it. If there were different organizations competing on that field in the game, I get that they're both trying to get their best player out there and to win on the field. But the umpire or the referee is supposed to be calling the shots. And that's what people at CBC who are the supposed journalists, broadcasters, who according to their own journalistic standards and ethics book, are supposed to be allowing for a diverse set of opinions and representing all Canadians. We're all paying for it.
Yeah.
But when they started to work for one side, we all know what happens when the referees don't call the shots right. The other team feels like, just a second here.
Right.
That's totally unfair. You know, that was a bad call after bad call after bad call. And you know, so I think the open field is a good one. And I wish there could be room for dialogue because this is destroying our ability to, and it's making people angry at each other, like the anger. When people don't feel heard, the anger just burbles up. I was thinking about cancel culture in the context of...
Yeah, that was something that you were talking about offline here.
Yeah, I was thinking about cancel culture in the context of a relationship. So... Say
yeah, this was really good.
I say you're in a marriage, okay, or in a boyfriend, you know, you've got a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever, and you're living together, and there's something really bad happening in the relationship like that needs to be discussed, or there's something going on, and one partner really needs to discuss it. And every time one partner tries to bring it up, the other one goes, oh, not this again, and turns around, walks out the door and slams the door and goes out the door. Okay. The other person is left there. What? There's nothing you can do. And this is a person you love, you're living with, you really need to talk about this, but you don't want them to keep walking out. So they come back some hours later and you know for sure when they come back, don't bring that up again because you're going to get abandoned or stormed out on again. Very, right. very hurtful thing to do to someone because the person left behind is really in a bind because now they know they got to wait for you to come home. You're going to probably have to sleep in the same bed. It's horrible. It's a horrible thing to do to someone. If they said, well, look, I need to cool down. I'll be back in 5 minutes. That's another story. I'm talking about the real bully tactic of saying, I'm out of here and I'm not going to let you talk. So what happens to the person is this where the conversation they need to have keeps getting stuffed down day after day, month after month, year after year. Before you know it, they start getting sick. They can't they're getting upper respiratory. The body starts to absorb all the hits of the non-discussion, the non, and the body can start to manifest the inability to express, in whether it's getting upper respiratory problems or adrenal problems. Like, there are all sorts of, there's all sorts of books on this. The book, you know, the body keeps score, and there are like lots of books written about emotional blows that we take that get built. And so I take that and I compare it to the body politic and society in general, and I'm like, what's happening and what I see is that the body politic in our society is getting sick. Mm. And people are, the anger they feel can't be expressed and it's not finding any way out. And people are really doing different things to respond to it. They're road raging, or they're just giving up and saying, screw it, I'm not going to vote, or simply, why bother? I'm just going to be a jerk too. And everybody stops listening, and the society gets sick in a way. I mean, this is just a little theory I've been thinking about, and thinking we are getting sick as a system because we're not allowed to even say something and then maybe take some feedback for it and say, hey, you know what? I wish I had said that a little bit differently. This is what I meant, and this is what I would have liked to say, but instead they want to hang you up high for something you've said that was maybe done on live radio when, and any, a lot of people out there who criticize people who have been on the air have never been on the air. Right. They've never stuck their necks out for anything. They're hiding in their little rooms with their little keyboard going, I'm going to be really smart with my pseudonym online and shoot out some rude message to this person. But I'd like to ask them, how many times have you stuck your neck out? Mm-hmm. How much do you actually care about this town? What are you actually doing? And I'd like to know, what did you do today to help a drug addict if you're so down for them? What have you done? Where's your volunteer work? Where's your, like, why don't you go do something instead of just attacking everybody? And that's where people are getting sick too. They think doing something is sending out a tweet. That's not doing something. Tweeting is not doing. It's not action. If people really, really cared about the downtrodden and the mentally ill and the drug addicted in Yale Town and downtown here, why don't they come down and pick up some litter every Saturday morning? Or go around and offer them a job, or, you know, anything. Just, but I don't see that happening. And so people, it's not doing something to sit in your room and whack people who are trying to get out there and be part of the public discourse. And good people, I know so many good people who just say, I can't do it, Dallas. I can't say anything. I'm like, come on, you've got to speak. They can't. They don't want their lives ruined.
Okay, so let's can we identify the two camps that we're referring to here? So mm-hmm. If we've got the one side that you're saying is, so who is feeling sick? Is that the people who feel they need to tweet and try and cancel people?
I think,
or is it the other ones too, or like, Dallas, I can't do this?
I think it's the whole political body of our society is getting sick because it's all driven by anger now. And the discourse is becoming more and more uncivilized, more and more vicious. And it's becoming, and I think that's kind of a sickness in and of itself for all of us. But the people who, because there is no proper ability to air different views through debate and the listening to a marketplace of ideas over how to solve some of our most intractable societal problems that we have today.
Well, I read an article this morning. It was on BuzzFeed, and I shared it with you before we got on here. That, Vancouver has always been, you know, touted as one of the best places in the world to live. And they had a list of the most overrated cities. Mm-hmm. And Vancouver is number 15, saying that it's like, has dirty streets. I mean, these are some of the sound bites here. Dirty streets. And the other thing is it's the most unfriendly. Is this not unfriendly? Yeah, the most socially disconnected people from anywhere. And it's interesting, like I did my last podcast with Leanne about the Asian hate crime problem and all that stuff. And, I have been, it's interesting doing what I do with this podcast because I really make sure that I'm not just walking out the door here and being a prick to everyone. Like, I actually do what I say I'm going to do here. So I'll give you an example. I was this bottle of wine here downstairs. I was in the liquor store and I'm paying. And this guy comes up and he's like, hey, I'm in a huge hurry. My car is parked outside. I got my two dogs in it. I'm illegally parked. And yeah, can you really hurry up? Super nice guy. No problem. I've seen him around in the neighborhood here. And so some might be like, okay, what an asshole. Why does he think he's special? This is like different viewpoints of the situation, right? And I went, hang on, this guy's in my neighborhood. He doesn't want to get a parking ticket. So my transaction had gone through. So I walk out, I go to his car, which is super illegally parked. I'm talking like not even in a parking space. I mean, it couldn't be worse parked. And I went to say hello to his dogs and sat and stood next to the driver's door. So if anyone came up, said, I would say it's my car. I don't even know this guy.
What a mensch you are. That's well, really nice, but it's a great thing to do.
And he came outside and he goes, yeah, you're a gentleman and a scholar. Thank you very much. But this is an example of doing something in your community for someone and seeing the other side of and helping.
Yeah.
And doing something, right? So, and, you know, I've also, since the Asian hate crime thing, you know, there's a lot of Asians in this community now. And I'm always like saying hello and going out of my way. And it's really been great. Like, so friendly. And maybe just the whole time they thought we didn't like people that, you know, have come from China or whatever it is. Maybe it was our problem, you know, to some degree. I mean, it's all systemic, as you know. It does take two to tango and everything. Sure, there's, you know, the guy with the car earlier could have been a total dick and said, get away from my car and my dogs. You know, do you have COVID? I mean, I don't know.
Yep.
Right? But I got the sense that, you know, it wasn't going to be that way. So, but I think people really need to just get out of their own head, have conversations, talk about things. But I just, you know, the next point, you know, I think is really we need to talk about this is that this idea of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate / canceling / is being taught in the schools.
How so?
Well, my daughter's school, it's going on there. You know, like she comes home from stuff from her teacher. I'm like, what? You're told this? Like, what is this? Like crazy stuff. Like, oh, I can't say this or I'm going to be canceled in my class.
She's used that word?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, daddy, I don't want to say that. I don't want to get canceled. It's like, I mean, it's crazy because.
What grade is your daughter in?
She's going in grade 8.
Yeah. Okay. So my daughters are going to grade 8 too.
So
I guess it's on their minds. Yes. I mean, my kids are at different schools and a lot of it's down to the teacher that they have. But there is a lot of, you know, dare I say, there's indoctrination taking place at school right now that it's not really about like when we were all in school. I mean, I'm a little older than you, but I mean, in the 70s, you know, it was really about reading, math, what do snakes eat, and going, you know, like in science, we were learning about
relish?
Do they eat relish? Relish and mustard.
Inside joke.
Yes, I was complaining earlier that the food carts are leaving mustard and relish all over the streets, thus making things dirty. But anyway, so, you know, we used to learn things in science that were just kind of science projects. And there's a lot of infusion into the learning now that is definitely along the lines of what you're saying. And it's pretty shocking when you read it.
Mm-hmm.
If I even gave some examples right now here on the air, I think that we'd get people so angry because I couldn't believe what I was reading is like a math question. Like, remember it used to be one fish is swimming up the stream at 10, at 2 kilometers an hour, 2 miles
like
an hour.
Mild algebra stuff.
Yeah. But now they use like, one lesbian immigrant has come from Syria and she's traveling at, you know, like 1 mile an hour and one, indigenous person, like they're stuffing in all sorts of things into things that we like the kids, it's all through everything. Instead of just being fish goes this rate, or the sand pile is building at this level or something. And it's really different. And I don't know who's doing that, but.
Well, I think that the, it seems like the big organizations have to be so safe. Doesn't matter if you're a school board or whatever it is, to the point where they just like molasses, you can't move, right? So, and I don't know why they have to, the high road, I'll give you an example. There's two to talk about here. The whole cancel thing was in the school was if you call someone the wrong pronoun, for instance, right? And, we can have another entire podcast on that because that's interesting. Hey, there's lots of perspectives to look at on that. But the whole, you can believe what you want to believe, but the fear you get it wrong, you get canceled.
Yeah,
that sucks because this is a new concept and this is like a ramp, as we know, it's the top foot of the ramp. It's hard to get on and it's hard for people to absorb this quickly. It's going to take time. So that's the first thing. Secondly, is that I had a conversation with a friend who said that the company they work at was trying to put a newsletter together about it was something to do with social distancing or talking about, and they needed a character. Mm-hmm. So they needed a character on a flyer, basically. It was an electronic piece, but
like a person's picture?
Like a body, a person, right? So they... The first thing is like, well, it can't be too thin, can't be too overweight, can't be this color, can't be this race. It has to be like super neutral. So like, well, how about a stick figure? Okay. So that's what they like landed on, stick figure. And then the last comment from the last person was like, well, we can't do this. It's like, why? Well, because the paper is white.
Wow.
So this is a black person.
Really?
But this is the kind of dysfunction of decision-making that in most companies would not make it in like 10 years ago. You'd be kicked out of the boardroom. This is ridiculous. We can't even move here.
No.
So, but the thing is if you have this flyer goes out and it's a big company, it's got 5,000 employees and it's got millions of customers and they put this thing up, they go, oh yeah, or a racist thing. And they go, okay, well, so-and-so brand is now racist. This is the problem. It's the power has come away from the people who make things.
Yeah. It's all sitting in the HR department now. So, the office of...
But the thing is, here's what I would ask all the people who like to cancel people is like, you know, with all due respect, because I don't know anybody, not any of these people, right? All we know, they could be avatars. We don't know if they're real. All we know is their Twitter profiles and Instagram profiles. That's all we know.
I know some local journalists who are trying to cancel people, but I won't say their names. Okay. But I do know, so I from a distance, I know of some.
Okay.
Okay?
So
that's all I know.
I would ask, think of all the companies, think of all of the things that we've done, all the clothes that you wear, all the cars you drive, all the developments you live in, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Tell me, would you have any of those? Without innovation, would you have any of those without vision? Would you have any of those without tenacity, without courage, without risk? The people have stuck their neck out to make these things. Yes, they've made a lot of money from them, but that's what free enterprise and entrepreneurship is about. You can't cancel the people that gave you everything.
No.
They've given you a platform to be able to do what you're doing. So respect that. Respect the platform you're on. And all the hard work that's been put onto that or put into making all of these things that you consume on a daily basis. And just have a conversation. If you have a gripe with someone, chat with them, talk about it, but don't go and just shit on everyone.
Yeah. It's funny that you say that because that's exactly what I remember watching this. It's a video that probably so many people have seen of Jordan Peterson having an interview with a British journalist who's a famous feminist. There was an anchor he had a back and forth with, and he finally stumped her in the back and forth. But she was trying to really put Jordan Peterson down, and he said, you know, here you sit with your microphone, your beautiful clothing, you're at the top of the hierarchy of your BBC position, you're sitting with a desk and a chair that rolls perfectly, you've been given, you probably drove here in a car, you probably live in a gorgeous home that's well-appointed with incredibly beautiful pillows. Like, it was just perfect. It went on and on. Like, who do you think made all of this possible for you? The lowly engineers who put together the microphone that works perfectly, and the makeup artists who got their brushes out, and who made those brushes for your mascara and your makeup to be applied? Who drove you here, and how did you get here? Did you fly, or did you walk, or did you have a car? And how, you know, there were people behind you who made all of this possible for you, and you seem to have no recognition of any of that. And this is precisely what you've just said. In order for there to be progress, people have to stick their necks out. And, you know, you think of the story about Steven Jobs. Like, apparently, personally, he wasn't a really nice guy. Like, that movie that was done, that he was supposedly a bad father and a bad husband. But he changed the world, literally, with his Apple. Like, it's incredible.
Really. Well, his vision did.
His vision did. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, people would say that, you know, he didn't actually... But I mean, he had the...
But his vision, okay? And there are people who are game changers, and he was, and sure, he had a team. And there again, he had a team behind him.
Well, he was able to, he was able to generate a shared destiny and shared vision.
Right.
Like, and obviously he was a master at doing that. It's funny you say that, because I said to my wife the other day, I said, you know, one of the best marketing things, do you remember the iPod mini... It used to be, it was one you would use for running. It was square.
Tiny. It was a little square thing, like
with
almost
the round
a centimeter.
Dial in the front?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and this is how he thinks. And this is why he was so brilliant. When he debuted that on the stage at one of the Apple developer conferences, he says, "You ever wonder what that little pocket on your jeans is for?" And he pulls it out of there.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And we all wonder what that pocket's for.
Yeah, what
the little,
was it for?
The little one, like, yeah. Yeah, and it fit perfectly. And he just pulls it out and goes, "It's for this."
Wow.
So, but these people are not the people who are canceling people.
No.
So
who is doing the canceling? This is,
I don't know. But
are they all from one side of the political spectrum, or are they from the others? Like, the university I went to, Princeton, there's a real mess going on the campus right now. There's all sorts of canceling going on. There was a really, probably one of the most prestigious upper, like, undergraduate schools in international affairs was called the Woodrow Wilson School of International Affairs.
Right.
And you had to apply to get into it during your sophomore or second year. And you had to have the grades. And a lot of the people who ended up getting into Woodrow Wilson, which was nicknamed Woody Woo, if you got in there, it meant you were probably on your way on a springboard into being a senator, congressman. Like, it was very much the brightest of the bright. They were way ahead of a lot of us, like big thinkers. And so apparently Woodrow Wilson was a racist. And he had also been the president of Princeton before. And so the school now has had its name removed. So the Woodrow Wilson School of International Affairs is no more. And it's called, I think it's now called First College or First, it's just like this, but blah. I'm like, well, isn't First bad too? Shouldn't you say it's last? Like, isn't that hierarchical to say First? So anyway.
Maybe bronze medal would we say.
Yeah, bronze school.
Actually, statues are made of bronze.
The common nothing school of international affairs. The non-excellent... We don't try very hard, and anybody can get in here, School of International Affairs. So, and this has been going on because of, so, and there are other places at Princeton that had names like residential colleges, and they're trying to pull down all of the names of these colleges. And, you know, the alumni are sort of going, what are we doing here? Is this a good idea? And then it's funny because I looked up the name of a professor who's out at UBC. And he was in the news recently, and I wanted to know who he was. And there it was. He had gone to the Woodrow Wilson School of International Affairs. And there on his CV, in his academic background. Has he taken out the name, the Woodrow Wilson's? No.
Right.
He's still using it.
Oh, it's too many artifacts everywhere.
Because it has, but it has meaning.
Cachet, yeah.
It has meaning, and it was a very, very prestigious school, regardless of whether Woodrow Wilson himself was a racist. And, you know, there would have been a lot of chauvinists, too, back then, who would be very offensive to women.
Mm-hmm.
But we, if we start down this path of canceling, which is going to lead us right into the discussion of the pulling down of the statues of Sir John A. Macdonald, which is happening in Canada right now. But this is a really, and then the other thing that was happening on the campus was that if a conservative student group would invite someone to speak, a group would form to protest it. They'd either book all the tickets and then turn their backs and walk out, or scream and yell so loudly that as soon as they'd start speaking, they'd make all this noise with like whistles and, you know, trumpets or whatever, and like make a noise so that they can't be heard, just essentially drowning them out. And this is happening at all the Ivies and other schools too. But, you know, is that really mature? And should this be happening? And it's really become a bit of a firestorm at Princeton, because not everybody believes this is a wise move. It's like it falls right into the category of now we're going to change the name in Vancouver of Trutch Street, because Trutch was a staunch supporter of the residential schools.
Well, and Dundas is being changed in Toronto. Do you know this?
I didn't know that.
It's costing millions and millions and millions of dollars, because you've got every street sign, you've got subway intersections, you've got buses. I mean, it's ridiculous.
So my view on that is, wouldn't it be better to say, this is who Trutch was, and have a lesson in it, instead of, because now once the name is gone, no one will know that there was somebody who had these views that now we consider to be not bad, and that they're not views that we hold today because they were old streets. I mean, you know, I don't know how far you can take this. I mean, if there was a street called Hitler Street, I mean, I really don't think people would want to see that. But I don't know how far it goes. And well, I'm not the perfect person to say everything that should stay and go. I'm just saying that I'm very concerned that we are literally erasing history.
Yeah. God, you know what?
Canceling history. Canceling John Macdonald.
You know, you just hit like probably one of the most poignant points there. Hitler Street. Because it's the perfect example of the far end of the spectrum of meaning for people of atrocity, right?
Yes.
So Hitler Street, it just wouldn't fly, right? But for some people who have decided, Indigenous people in Canada have a Hitler Street as far as they're concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So that's hard. I mean, how do you square this?
Right.
You know, I mean, wow, like that just kind of blew my mind there a bit, because it is a matter of what is a point of contention for you, not for you, but for a person, when they go, well, that's my Hitler. Well, why is it your Hitler? Okay, well, because, you know, I mean, in Canada, the residential schools, all that kind of stuff, there was all these things that happened, right? So that's what it is for them. But I'm completely stumped on it. I don't have a defense for that, because no one would allow a Hitler Street.
Right.
So where do we go with this? You do hear where I'm going.
I hear what you're...
Because you just said something that is almost... Like if the spectrum is... Well, what's almost as bad as Hitler Street? Okay, Swastika Avenue?
Yeah.
Or is there...
Goebbels.
Third Reich, you know, Third
Mengele
Reich...
Mengele Plaza? You know, and unfortunately, the Holocaust, the atrocities were so... Like, I'm sure there's some names from Rwanda, too, that...
Yeah.
Like, Hutu Street, or like, I don't remember... Like, I'm not an expert on Rwanda, but what happened there was...
Yeah.
You know, horrific.
Right.
Okay. So, but these are, so it is like, how do you, squaring that circle is a difficult thing, but it shouldn't just be that one side says, this is what's going to happen. I think it needs to be a carefully considered decision. For example, you know, a lot of people would, who live in Poland. I've been to Poland. I've gone through many of the death camps. I've been to Auschwitz. I've stood in gas chambers that were there.
They didn't pull them down.
No,
and they educate the world with it.
Yes, but there has been a long time push. The people of Poland don't enjoy these sort of macabre groups coming through to watch their sins. Actually, it wasn't the Polish people. Poland became the ground zero for death camps. Most of the death camps were put in Poland.
Right.
Poor Poland, right?
Yeah.
You know, they've been this army comes through. These people have been truly trashed in history. But so you would go, like I went on the March of the Living, which is an annual march where you go and you literally ride on the train tracks to Birkenau, Auschwitz, on the train that was there. And you go to different places and they teach you, they show you the ghettos and you see these places. And it's traumatizing to see what's there. And there's been a lot of people would like it to just be all taken down. But if you take it down, then what? No one would ever believe it happened. There's a container, like this gigantic glass container of hair, girls' braids and ponytails, and like, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, and it's right there. See, there's no faking it. There's no saying it didn't happen. It's there. And I know that it's so awful to look at. It's like the Cambodia, the skulls piled on top of each other. Like, is it better to get rid of them all, or is it better to say, this is what happened? This was a totalitarian regime that started to kill anybody who went up against it.
Right.
This is super dangerous stuff. When you start saying that certain viewpoints are invalid, very dangerous.
Right.
Because who's going to decide which view is okay and which is not? And I feel that this is where we're headed. Canceling is just the beginning. And what about all the books that are refusing to be published
now? This is something that, so is Trudeau basically the leader of whatever country, whatever region, that leadership, but that person is a figurehead. That person's not actually the CEO of a country.
Right.
They're the spokesperson for the country, more like. Even that they've been elected, they have to go through a whole bunch of weird stuff. But they're not actually the ones that pull all the strings. They're
no.
a puppet to some degree. Even in the States, Biden's the same thing.
Yeah.
Right? So the question is who are the moderators of what is right and what is wrong? Like who gets to point on where John A. McDonald is on the Hitler scale of names?
This is the question.
Because we don't know who it is. And the problem is that person has to be completely center. And we don't know how to do that.
No, we don't. And who's, if we pull down the statue of Sir John A. Macdonald, then the lesson that could be taught around the policies he had that were damaging won't happen, because visually, to see the statue and say, that was Robert E. Lee, that was Sir John A. Macdonald, or that was, was a judge, Begbie, who was called the hanging judge in BC or whatever.
Or
Queen Victoria. Like, you know,
are we going to rename the capital of BC?
I could see it coming. I hear there's a movement afoot to rename British Columbia.
Oh.
You've heard that?
I haven't heard that.
Yeah. And the Georgia Strait and changing a lot of names. And I don't think that people are really being consulted. I think that these decisions are making behind closed doors, and then suddenly it's just announced on the general public, and they're like, what? Hold on a second here. There should have been extensive discussions about this, and have historians weigh in and talk about the dangers of erasing history, because this is precisely what Mao did. Mao canceled everything. He got rid of the four olds or whatever. Remember the four olds? Old things, old beliefs, old thoughts, and the four olds had to go. And they were gone. And I have friends who grew up during the Cultural Revolution in China. And, you know, this was a mass murder. This was a genocide of their own people. Millions and millions and millions of people starved to death in the Cultural Revolution, in the Great Leap Forward. And his parents were quote-unquote intellectuals, who I think they were engineers or teachers or something. And he was a little boy, and his parents were simply uprooted and told, you're not going to have this job anymore. You're going to the field and you're going to dig holes and make rice or whichever field they were sent to. And they had no choice in it. And so I said, well, what happened to you? And he said, well, I stayed with my grandmother. I mean, and do you hear him complaining? Like, and here he is now, he's an accountant working for a big firm, but the sadness of that and what happened, and but this was disrupting history, erasing all of their history and changing society in the name of what? Mm-hmm. And I see that we're on that kind of march towards that now, that something very, very bad is afoot in our society. And I think we're in very dangerous times, frankly. I really do, James. And this cancellation, like right now I say to myself, for a long time I've wondered, how can it be that child pornography is being allowed on the internet? I've asked that for years. How can this possibly be that little babies are being shown on the internet, on these sites that apparently are out there? But now we're able to pull down someone who says the word election fraud overnight, gone, banned, vaporized. I'm like, wow, how come this effort hasn't gone into stopping, canceling child porn? Tell me why. Okay, we canceled Dr. Seuss, but we don't.
I know, but hang on a sec here though. So with child pornography, mm-hmm. I don't think Google allows that. Okay. I don't think Safari allows that. I don't think DuckDuckGoGo even, which is the most, I don't know if you've used that search engine, but that's like zero filter, zero. I mean, it's pure internet.
Yeah.
They're not going to allow that.
No.
So these are BitTorrent. The internet is servers. Keep that in mind, right?
Yeah.
So all you need is an IP address. So in order to shut that down, you essentially have to break down internet service. So it's the hosting of where a server is. Mm-hmm. So child pornography has actually general pornography has been throttled a lot.
Has it?
Yeah. It's been actually TikTok, for instance. Mm-hmm. They've totally cracked down on girls walking, you know, doing the bikini thing.
Have they?
Yeah.
I'm super glad.
It's way less, way, way less. So, you know, I was chatting with this girl who's an
Instagram. That actually makes me feel so happy.
Well, as an Instagram influencer, and she goes, yeah.
Like, let's have a little cheer for the white hats. Like, yay.
Yeah.
Finally, someone's protecting the kids. Like, a big concern of mine is children.
Well, stuff is happening.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah, I know you're concerned with children's well-being.
Yeah, it really. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they don't deserve it, right?
The kids.
And actually, we need to raise these children and protect these children to be able to take over, to not do the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they all think we're all doing the wrong thing with our generations. But I think that this whole, can we just talk about this spectrum, this Hitler thing? Honestly, I can't get it out of my head because, you know, I obviously have a lot of Jewish friends and I think that, you know, it's obviously disgusting. Mm-hmm. What went on. Mm-hmm. So, I think you and I obviously.
You and I have understood.
We've already talked about that before. But there has been cultural evolution of society and on how brutal things have changed. We're not brutal as we used to be.
Correct.
You know, if you look at wars and the way that things were from years and years and years ago it was terrible, the shit that went down, right?
Yeah.
And now, you know, we have treaties, we have, war crimes, we have all of these types of things that are sort of guidebooks on how we can conduct ourselves in battle and whatever, right? So, but the thing is, we did that. There has been societal warfare from different tribes and groups over time, mm-hmm. from rich to poor, from powered to powerless, from kings and queens to, you know, the general public or whatever you want to call it, right? So we've had an evolution of things that have happened and we've gotten better over time. But now we're blaming ourselves from the stuff we did while we were learning. And we're still learning. So John A. McDonald gets canceled because that's what everyone in the world did at that time. Mm-hmm. And it's actually reasonably benign compared to what the other shit that went down everywhere else in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, seriously.
Yes.
I mean, you look at...
Look what happened in Ireland.
Canada's entire story. And I know there's some been atrocities, Catholic Church, all that sort of stuff, but it's reasonably benign. Compare it. And it's horrible for lots of people. So please, anybody listening to this, I don't think anything, all the shit that's going on in Canada right now is good. I don't. But have you seen the stuff that's gone on in other places? Just consider that for a second. It's terrible too. And in comparison, it's like, you know, taking people out to the back and just blame shooting them.
Yes, it is.
Right? So, I mean, that people might argue, well, that did happen. I'm like, okay, well, possibly, but did it happen in mass? Did it happen to millions of people years and years and years ago? Like, as in, so we have to look at what was just the behavior of the times and the way the world ticked and talked at that time. And that was Canada trying to be as good as Canada could be at that time for that time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is very difficult stuff, right?
It's super difficult stuff.
But we can't erase history.
No.
And then, we have to learn from it.
Correct. And everybody knows that. And yet they keep doing it. And who is the they? Who, which group demanded that Sir John A. Macdonald got pulled down? Which is the park? I'm just going to pull this article up. It's... The statue of Sir John A. Macdonald is removed from a park in his hometown of Kingston, Ontario. And so historians are saying erasing, misrepresenting Canada's history erodes the foundations of our society. This goes back to my point that we're getting sick because we're sick in the sense that we're not able to reflect back on anything or have any place in our world. If you erase our history, what are we, just a floating little bobblehead going around reacting to the latest thing that makes us angry on Twitter? There has to be some discussion of Sir John McDonald.
Okay, so here, this is where this could be a watershed moment.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. Because John A. Macdonald was one of the founding members of the board of directors of a lot of very powerful Canadian companies.
Was he?
Yeah. I'm not going to name the names.
Yeah.
People can do their own research. Yeah. But what are we going to do? Cancel these companies now too? Now we got a lot of money involved. This is where the watershed moment happens, where you go, this is, you know, the whole too big to fail thing?
Yes.
Well, there's too much money involved. And we know what this planet moves on.
Yeah.
It moves on money.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Are those?
Because I'm talking blue chip companies, not like little ones. I'm talking have been part of Canada's fabric of industries, the industries that were founded back then.
Yeah, it'd probably be things like, yeah, I can think of a few, and probably we don't want to say them. Because
I don't want to say their names.
No.
Because I don't want to. Here's the thing: is I don't actually want to. I don't want to. I think through this conversation, we have identified that there is viewpoints from either side, and we can understand everyone has a Hitler. Everyone does, right? And the question is that where are we do have to realize what is pure evil and what was situationally for a time that at that time was a thing that was a worldwide systemic problem. And now we look back and go, how as humans did we let this happen? Well, let's make sure we remember what we did wrong. And it's not even us. I mean, Christ, I mean, you didn't do this. Yeah. I didn't do this, right?
I think that's what a lot of people are saying. We didn't do this. Why are you calling me a colonialist? Like, what is this? The language is so accusatory and angry. It's like, this is not helping our society move forward. It's extremely divisive and we're not improving anything. Like, how does that help? It's done. It's over. The whole world was on the move back then. The Spaniards were going out. The the Dutch were going out, they were exploring the world. It was like, right? I mean, everybody was going all over the place. That was the time. Was it right to go and quote unquote conquer other places? But I mean, the Vikings came to Ireland over and over again, and they just ripped through towns in Ireland. Horrible stuff, slaughtering people in all the churches and taking the good stuff and leaving. They were conquering Ireland constantly. They were arriving there. Wales, the Spanish came. You know, these were really brute times.
And this isn't long ago for Canada.
No, this isn't long ago for Canada.
No.
But, you know, the world was being discovered and people were going out and exploring, and this is what happened. And am I happy?
Civilized, right? Civilized, what's considered civilized has changed.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
That's that.
And am I happy what happened to these little children? No, it breaks all of our hearts. I think there's not a person who would think that. I mean, it's so sad.
But that's it. I mean, that's.
It's profoundly disturbing, just like it's profoundly disturbing to go to Poland. I mean, these things are extremely upsetting. But the point of coming back to that whole thing is it better to tear down the remnants of these death camps and get rid of them and never see that hideous sign over the entrance to Auschwitz again?
Yeah.
Like, what does it say? Work will set you free. Macht es frei. Work will set you free, which is that hideous sign at the entrance to Auschwitz.
Work will set you free.
Yeah, work will set you free. Macht es frei.
That is so cruel. Yes. You're not getting free, A.
No. The whole thing was so cruelly planned. But that sign, like, would it be better to get rid of it because it brings back such horrific memories for so many people? I think the Jewish people would say, no, it must never come down. I know the Polish people don't like it being there. I know that. We saw them watching us go on the train. They stand there almost like looking at you like, please go away. We don't want to think about it anymore. So it's a really complicated thing. I think it's sad to pull down statues, whether it's of a good guy or a bad guy. Maybe a new script below it, like a sign below, would say, it needs to be said that Sir John A. Macdonald was blah, 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 blah. Or
yeah.
Lessons learned about it.
Yeah, scan the QR code. Yeah, the...
yeah.
It's a big QR code that takes it all the shit he did. But so where this all is going is where I get concerned. Because, you said the statement, we're all in big trouble with this.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the... We've seen some, you know, the next sort of world war of some sort is going to be something that is going to start off very, what is this? And it's going to be something like, you know what? I went to use my debit card today and it didn't work.
That's right.
That's how it will start. And then we will go, okay, then that will catch on like a tinderbox and it will go very, very quickly and you wait of what will happen. We cannot be infighting with each other when that happens.
Correct.
Right now, this is actually being engineered. And I'm not going to say who or whatever it is, but by something for us to turn each other on ourselves or to turn us on ourselves. This is what is being engineered to be done to us right now. All these news agencies, these articles, all stuff that's trying to piss us all off, echo chambering, all these ads that are, or news articles, posts that are making us go deeper and deeper into our own ideologies of what we think. This is all happening to turn ourselves into enemies of each other by putting us into these groups of canceling each other. I believe this, you believe that, we're bad, you're bad, all this kind of stuff. Because when that debit card moment happens, they want us to be as weak as possible.
Yes.
That's what is being designed right now.
And this is the part where I say I think something very evil is afoot.
Yeah.
I think there's an agenda that's slowly creeping in, and not so slowly, it's speeding up. It's so dangerous to start talking about lockdown, not, but I would never have dreamed it would be possible to tell people they're not allowed, that you have to stand on a circle, or that you have like positive rules, not don't do this, but you will do this. Like there's a passive rules that don't cross at a red light or don't go to, but now you will not only not cross at the red light, you will put on a little outfit and jump up and down three times on each corner before you cross the street. So you're going to have to do something because we've made it law, and that's the way it's going to be. And you're going to do it no matter how foolish or silly or illogical on certain levels it may be. I'm surprised to see, and it's been a very interesting thing to watch how people are going along with this and go move into government control of things. It's been an interesting time, I'll just say that. And I think that you're right, the debit card moment, and people are talking about that kind of thing.
You hear this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're talking about, they're trying to first move us from into a cashless society. Once you're not using cash anymore, guess what? They know everything you spend, everywhere you go, everything you've done. They need information on you. They just go to your bank. They know everywhere you just spent all your money. Mm-hmm. When you had cash, you could have some privacy. I'm not sure what's going on exactly. James, I don't know why I keep calling the same Scott. I must have done an interview with some. But anyway, James, I'm like concerned that cancel culture combined with this is creating people who don't know where to go to speak out against what they see, feel happening. And when the media doesn't even seem to want to hear any countervailing views to what's happening, this is really a different time and space. It used to be that all points of view were heard. I remember back when I was working at, or back even when I used to be listening to CKNW a lot when I was younger, and there was a conservative government in office. It was probably Gordon Campbell. But you know who was always on the air? It was never the government people. It was Mo Sahota, Joy McPhail, and Glenn Clark. Mm-hmm. The three pit bulls, rah, 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 always screaming about union rights. We don't want to race to the bottom and then minimum wage. And boy, were they effective. But they never had the actual ministers on. Throughout all of this, have you heard from any liberal critic? Have you?
Well, they don't want to stick their neck out.
Well, have you heard? But why? Nobody questioning the prevailing viewpoints on anything, whether...
Because their job is to stay elected. That's all they care about.
But how come Joy McPhail used to be able to do it?
Well,
because she wasn't canceled for saying it.
I see, yeah.
She was brought on the air, given her airtime, and she was allowed to speak the other point of view that was countervailing to the government policies at the time, which was important, even though something she said used to drive me insane. But they had an impact. They were like a real pit bulls, and I'm wondering where the pit bulls are now fighting back against stuff. Have they all been intimidated into silence?
So is that the so why are people so apathetic these days? Like they just don't want to do anything. I'm not talking about the canceling people. I'm talking about everyone else. And the canceling people, out of 100 people, is one person. Not even. It's like half a person. It's a quarter of a person. It's not a lot of people.
I know.
Right? Maybe, actually, out of 1,000 people, how many is it? One?
One.
It was one loud person.
Yeah.
One person that for some reason feels they need to do this.
Why are people apathetic?
Yeah, like what is it? Like we've got a couple of things that are making it very complicated. We have this, I mean, I was watching when Jeff Bezos went up and, you know, with the Blue Origin thing and went up to, you know, and Richard Branson did it before and all that kind of stuff. There was so much like, I never want to buy an Amazon product again because this guy spent all this money to just go up and come down.
Right.
Why is he, this is bullshit, blah, blah, blah. And trying to sort of shit on the guy because, and then they start talking about how the hours of workers at Amazon, how shitty they get paid and all this stuff. So You're talking about this. I think this, the fact that obviously me being an entrepreneur, I like having the world as my oyster to be able to do what I want. I treat people fairly. I want to be able to have, you know, build a great company, do great things. And I don't want to hurt anyone on the way. That's my motto. I like that.
Same here. I run my business the same way.
So, and, but I wouldn't do this if I felt there was some ceiling that I, if I got to that I couldn't get any further, right? I do this because the possibilities are unlimited for somebody who starts their own thing, risks everything, and goes and does it. I'm no different than Jeff Bezos, what he did. It's just a different scale. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, it's the same courage. It's the same stuff, right? But when mega, mega, mega rich people have that much wealth, it sucks. It's like water, right? It moves away from you. So there's a drought somewhere else. Stuff can't grow. And I think we, you know, I would say more, if you were talking about, you know, United States politics, in terms of entrepreneurialism, I'm more right. I would say in terms of some stuff that's good for people, I'm kind of left in ways. I could sort of mix this whole thing. Mm-hmm. But
which I think is actually the position of most people.
It is.
Nobody is totally in one. Most people have a combination of views.
But the point I'm getting at is the narrative here for a lot of people is that there's too much. Like when we grew up, okay, so 70s and 80s, right? Mm-hmm. The richest people weren't that much more rich.
Yes, that's true.
So it's kind of that stuff that I think people really feel like they can never get ahead.
Yes.
They just can't make it. And
you're talking about opportunity.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that's where this is all going. So, you know, when you see Bezos go up in a spaceship and he goes up and he pops up, he goes, "Yeah, I went another 1,000 feet than Richard Branson." People are going, "What the fuck are we doing here?"
Yeah.
Right. Did you actually like the difference between what they did and what Elon Musk did? He went and gave the globe internet with Starlink. I mean, that's a use of resources and not an ego thing. The guy actually is altruistic. He basically wants to try and, you know, do good for the world. He really does.
I agree.
So, but, you know, you do need to go and do space things that are seemingly useless for progress.
Yeah.
We just don't know what the progress is yet because people don't have enough foresight to be able to go, well, if we hadn't done those things with Richard and Jeff, we wouldn't have done this other stuff.
Well, so much of the technology we use today has been developed by the Israeli military. They've had to have so much like technology to defend this minuscule country against like surrounded by enemies on every side. They've so many of the things that we've got even in our phones are all to do with stuff they never intended. But so these, those wouldn't be sort of egotistical moves on the part of entrepreneurs or the military in Israel developing these things.
Well, that's
from
but need.
Bezos, even if it is an exercise in ego by Branson and Bezos and these guys to shoot to the moon or wherever they want to go, and it makes some of us repulsed. It's like, oh, brother, like really? But you know what? There's stuff that trickles down out of that achievement that's okay. And maybe I think a lot of us need to get used to the fact, like I, as an entrepreneur myself too, I believe in the free market. I love free enterprise. I'm very concerned about the fact that Canada is moving more and more to a socialist model and centrally controlled stuff. I think that people running their own affairs and running their own lives and managing their own stuff is far more efficient, of course, than centrally controlled economies. And so I'm a free enterpriser, and I'd like to see small business really supported in Canada and the middle class grow. But, you know, and so I do worry when companies like Amazon and these ones are taking away from the local businesses, but there's also agency in each one of us to say, you know what? I'm going to a small town on the Sunshine Coast this week, and I'm going to buy something from every little shop there. And I'm going to take, instead of buying something from Amazon this week, like, just do something about it. Don't just complain about Jeff Bezos. Stop ordering from Amazon. If you can get it locally, go get off your butt. Don't shop at night in your bed. Mm-hmm. Go tomorrow and support a little store down the street from you. There's really cute stuff, but if we don't support these people, they will disappear. So we're helping. We need to have agency ourselves and action, action, action. Try and do something yourself about turning this around. And you know, Bezos and these gigantic companies, Costco and, you know, what are some of the other hugies like Walmart, these places that seem to destroy small business. Well, we don't have to shop there. We do have choice. I know the prices are low and so on, but
The prices are low and so on is everything.
Is everything people. Because they can buy in bulk. But
to some people, that's everything.
And I know that is everything.
Because there's, for instance, there are people who don't, let's take food, for instance, right?
Yep.
There's people who don't have a palate to be able to taste anything really that great.
Yep.
Because they, you know, a palate is learned.
Yep.
I mean, if you take a kid and give them great food since they were young, they're going to become older and be like, hey, I don't need other shit.
Yeah.
Right. But you're talking about people who are poor. They don't have a palate for food and it's seemingly sustenance only. We're not talking passion or at all. This is like, I need bread. I need eggs. I need pasta. I need
orange juice and
all this crap. Right. So, I mean, it's first, they can't afford to go to a little shop for that.
But Amazon isn't cheap. It's not cheaper to buy on Amazon, right? Is it?
Yeah, it is.
You think so?
The problem with Amazon is it's amazing.
The problem with Amazon is it works. So should we, but okay, so let's just come around here because we haven't really talked about this, but do you think that Amazon is a bad thing or?
I think it's like what we talked about. It's the John A. McDonald of today. You know, it's people are going to say the slave workers who don't get paid enough at Amazon. Well, okay, I know that's a little bit of an over exaggeration, but it's just a sign of where we are. Mm-hmm. This is a symptom of our culture. Mm-hmm. We want to get stuff for as little as possible with no effort. And that's what Amazon does. Honestly, like I ordered 16 monitors that I would have had to go to Best Buy, pick them up myself, go and talk to somebody that I actually know more about the product than they do. Mm-hmm. And I just went on Amazon, boom, it's here the next day.
See, you can't beat that.
Yeah, that's the problem.
That you can't
beat. And it was
that.
At a price that was cheaper than there.
Right.
Do I want to do that? But if it's like Best Buy.
But Best Buy is a huge thing too.
So. Yeah, I mean, they're a bunch of assholes as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, who cares?
Right.
Right, so there's.
And it comes down to your business, your bottom line too. You've got to make the best decision you can for your business. See, and like, I didn't come on the show tonight to bash Amazon either. I'm not, I don't want to do that. I'm just trying to think of.
But we're like, talking about the reason behind why people feel the need to cancel and feel the need of being unhappy. And I think this is all systemic. This is where we're going with all this.
Okay.
People might be thinking, listening to this, like, where are you guys going? What are you guys talking about? The point is that people need meaning and they're being stripped of meaning.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. People hate their jobs. They see people who are super loaded and they go, I just want that because I have a finite time on this planet and I just want that. I want to become an Instagram influencer or a TikTok influencer, and I don't want to go and get this quickly.
But do you think that's a change in the way people think? Because I lived in crappy apartments right up until I was like 32. Like, I didn't have a fancy place until, you know what I mean? Like, when I first got called to the bar, do you think people are more impatient now? Like, it's
totally.
I want it now.
Yes.
And if I don't have it now, I'm disillusioned.
Yes. 100%, that's what it is. People want instant now. Everything's instant.
Because I remember growing up, the guys who had Mercedes Benzes were like men in their 60s, and that was about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had to accrue wealth to get it.
The moms had maybe a station wagon or a Volkswagen, like, you know, they had a, or no car. The kids didn't, each kid didn't have a car for sure.
But also the other thing that, you know, that gets mixed in with this is that we have that feeling that I'm not satisfied. No, I'm not satisfied, but people out there are not satisfied with their job or their life, or that they need to add meaning by virtue signaling that they have this brand and they represent these things. So that's that. And then the other part is we have misinformation, fake news all over the place, even from credible news sources who have to have clickbait, otherwise they're irrelevant. Otherwise they can't sell ads.
Yep.
So you end up with this big mess. So you have people who are impatient, who don't really like life, mixed with fake news. Now they need to do something. Well, what's easier than a tweet?
Yeah.
It's pretty easy. Oh, I just had meaning. Oh God, look how many people liked my post. It's a quick fix. We're addicted to this need for a quick result because we know we don't, a lot of people don't want to put in the work for the long result. So this is.
I know they want an apartment that looks all like that right now, and they're only like 27. I mean, right? I mean, you know, didn't you have an apartment with cockroaches in it when you were in your 20s? I sure did. Cockroaches, mice, whatever, you know. Like, but you were working on the long game.
Yeah.
You know, like eventually I'm going to get the car I want. And but now you're right. I mean, it's sort of this instant society. And I think that also this notion, like, you know, if you're raised with any faith, and you know that I have a faith, and I, you know, we're taught that there will always be people with more than you and people with less than you, no matter where you are in life. Even the people who are living on the street, there are people below, like there's a rank even on the street between who's got a little bit more and who's got less. So there's always going to be people with more than you and always people with less than you.
People aren't taught this stuff now, though. I mean, these tenets of religion, I mean, these things are, I mean, look, people don't have any North Star now. They don't. I mean, most people are like, no, I guess I'm atheist, or I don't know what gender I am. I don't know what religion I am. I'm confused in general. So now people don't, they have no framework to live with. They just have, it's a free for all. And they're trying to figure it out themselves.
Yes, and it's, you know, I don't know what to say about that except for I find that this is really a sad state of affairs, because if you don't have an internal source of spiritual guidance.
Or value system,
you're in trouble in this world right now, because it's moving fast and people need, I watch my kids and they need to be reminded about the basic tenets sometimes about, and I'm not talking about preaching to them, but just talking about, no, that's not what we do, or remember your manners and don't speak that way, or that word is vulgar, or don't, you know, they're looking to us for leadership. And sometimes I wonder if a lot of what's happening with I hate to always hit on the millennials, but it's the word that everybody uses, is like, it's like they have no manners. They don't respect rank at all. I've said to some of my friends who are parents, is it because, and they're the ones who are doing a lot of the counseling and the screaming online and the demanding this and demanding that, like at the college campuses, screaming at professors and people who are way older than they are, who have been studying way longer, who have earned the chops to be up there on that stage delivering this lecture. And they're screaming and throwing tomatoes at them. It's like, what is going on here? Sit down or leave. Other people would like to hear this person speak, but they're acting like impetuous three-year-olds. And they're not even giving, there's no thought of like, this person knows more than you do. You're only 21. You're only 19. You just started. You're a freshman. You know nothing. You know, it's like when you get out of law school, you arrive at the law firm, everything you learned is useless. They say, go photocopy for 3 weeks.
Exactly.
I remember getting out of law school and all I did was photocopy for a whole summer. And, you know, I learned more about photocopy machines And I was like, they should have a course on this at law school.
Yeah.
And you know, you carried someone's briefcase, you walked around, you followed around, you was like, yes sir, no sir, three bags full, sir, I'll stay up till 2 a.m, I'll stay. But you were so excited to have a job. And this has been really turned around, and you respected the rank within the firm. And you know, people can say this hierarchy, but you know, what are you going to replace it with? You know, and even in families, the I've said to some other parents, I think it was lost when we stopped calling each other Mr. and Mrs. You know, Faulkner.
Right.
I still call some of the parents I knew growing up as Mr. Woodside or Mr.
Oh, I see.
But you know, you see them in the street. But why did we lose the salutations for everybody? I mean, it established some rank. You're a kid. You're a grown up. I don't know. You know, if that's. But I think that a lot of the behavior.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know. You had rank as a grown-up, and I mean, I think it's good that we talk to kids more and that we hear from them.
Do you know when
more.
This changed for me when I was a kid?
When?
Was when my friends, when I was about 11 or 12, I used to call my best friends mom, not Mrs. so-and-so. And yeah, my friend used to call my mom. Hey, Mom.
That's cute.
Because it was kind of like a...
That's cute.
Yeah.
But she didn't call her Sarah or whatever your mom's
no,
name.
No, she didn't call
Hi,
her.
Sarah.
No, or like, it wasn't that. But the people who didn't know them would say, hello, Mrs. Faulkner or whatever, right. Mr. Faulkner, how are you? And yeah, it's kind of interesting that whole thing. I mean, the millennial thing, I mean, we're not even talking about that generation now, right? Because they're in their 30s or their late 20s.
Yeah.
Or mid to late 20s. Now you're talking about a even younger generation. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of like, okay, what's this one doing? And what are their value? What's their value system? I mean, I think a lot of this stuff is going to really come down to what we're doing with the planet and where that is going to land. Because, you know, you've seen all the wildfires, all the stuff that's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's crazy. You just wait. You know, what will happen is that the canceling people who have somehow... with or without other national coordination that we talked about earlier in this conversation, whether or not it's that or not, or other groups who are pushing this. But those people, when the shit hits the fan, when their debit card doesn't work, when that watershed moment happens, they're all going to look at, oh, who's going to fix this?
Mm-hmm.
And the people who are the capable people that they've been shitting on for mm-hmm. a while are going to be like, well, I don't fucking help you.
That's right.
So
you brought this on, dude.
Yeah.
You're the one who went along with all of this.
So I think people need to be very wary about where capability lies and respect the people who have given you great things. And all that is asked is, can we have a conversation? I'm not going to judge you right now. Can we have a conversation of perhaps your behavior wasn't quite right? Not like, hey, I'm going to cancel your brand. You're out of business. Any of this finger-pointing stuff. It has to be a narrative. There has to be resolution. Everyone has to learn because we are still evolving. We're not in a concrete state right now of society. This thing is a moving organism. It's a living organism. Our culture is a living organism. It is going to have different states of flux of where it needs to fix itself, where it was right, where it was wrong. Not just where it's wrong, where it's wrong, where it's wrong. Because there's a lot of right going on.
That's a really good point. But apparently focusing on what's wrong and making people angry is what gets the clicks. And I was just listening to another really good podcast with Barry Weiss and a fellow who's written a book called Trust Me, I'm Lying, and a book called Conspiracy.
Trust Me, I'm Lying. What a great title.
Trust Me, I'm Lying, and it's his experience working in the mainstream media.
Wow.
And they were talking about the original cancel project that happened by a guy named Thiel, who was outed by somebody at a company called Gawker. Mm-hmm. And Gawker was the very first online blog.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And he was deeply hurt because he was outed. Because they published a story apparently that said, I think it's somebody Thiel, I can't remember his first name, is seriously gay.
Oh, Peter Thiel.
Peter Thiel.
All right.
Okay.
I mean, one of the best venture capitalists ever.
Right. And he was devastated by this. And it went out. And he was in, like, it was hard to listen to, like, he was in shock that this had been written. And he was like, why would someone do this? Mm-hmm. And Gawker was all full of itself. Oh, you know, what's the big deal? Suck it up, buttercup. You know, this is the new world and we can do this. And he went to all these different lawyers and he said, can I sue for this? Can I? And everybody said, no, you can't. Like, he was constantly, and here he is with all this money and completely powerless to do anything about mm-hmm. this complete exposure of his personal life, which was nobody's darn business. Mm-hmm. And so, but then somebody came up with an idea. A young person said, I'll tell you how to get back at Gawker. And it was a 5-year long, it was a long war. And he ended up taking them down over a Hulk Hogan video or something. Like, he backed the Hulk Hogan challenge to Gawker, who published some sex tape of Hulk Hogan having sex with a woman who was someone else's wife. And it was just a ridiculous thing, but they didn't know that Thiel was behind Hogan. And, but it came out that it ended up, I think Hogan was awarded something like $100 million and it destroyed Gawker.
I see.
Bankrupted them.
I see.
And so that was they were describing this as the first big cancel, but it was a long game and not everybody can do that, but he was seriously damaged by the recklessness of somebody wanting to just publish something salacious about his personal life, which had nothing to do with anything.
So if you think that we can, I mean, we've covered a ton of stuff here. What can we do to fix this? So let's, the people who have said to you, look, Dallas shouldn't be saying this, you shouldn't be saying that, all these groups, et cetera. I mean, you're,
there's only one group that's...
Well, what's your message to those people?
My message to those people is if you don't... I would like to say, look, if you think that view is repugnant, why don't you arrange to come on the air and let's talk about it and let other people listen to why you find it repugnant and I'll explain why I think it's a good idea. Right. Or, but let's talk about it in a fair forum and let's put it all in context and have a full discussion about it. But these hit jobs have got to stop. I don't think it's fair to do it on the right or the left. For example, let me say, like, do I like Justin Trudeau? No. I think his policies are irrational. I think it's taking Canada on a very dangerous path. I think he's anti-free enterprise. I don't like his tax policy, blah, blah, blah. But did I think he should be thrown out of office for being caught in photos of him being in blackface? As much as I think it's really weird to have ever dressed in blackface, and I've never done it myself, would never have dreamed of it.
Yeah.
I still think that picking out photos of things that people did when they were in high school is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And like, I think we shouldn't, no one will run for office if that's what's going to happen to them.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Well,
let's get real.
If Trudeau came and walked in here right now and sat right at this table, mm-hmm. you wouldn't be like, hey, you effing whatever. You'd be like, you know, hello, sir, you know, yeah. all this stuff. Respectful, right?
Yes.
You know, I don't really like what you did here and it's so nice to meet you. I mean, that's the kind of thing that should be happening, but that's not happening out there.
It's not happening.
There's no respect.
There's no respect.
Respect is gone.
Respect is gone. And sadly, I think it's a very...
Like totally gone.
Like, I think totally gone, yes. I think it's totally gone. And people just throw rocks at each other now. We haven't really talked about a big case of cancellation that just happened, which was Harsha Walia getting booted out of the BC Civil Liberties Association. She was just the newly appointed executive director. She made a very reckless comment. When the churches were on fire, she said, burn it all down.
Oh, yeah, no, I read that, yeah.
And she's now been, because the funding was, I was on Twitter today that apparently the funding was pulled. The provincial government leaned on them and said, we can't have this.
Which is interesting, because that is, in support of the narrative, of the opposite narrative, right?
Well, she was supporting, if she was saying burn down every church because the Roman Catholic Church did this to these
right, these that's what I'm getting
so at. But she's the head of the BC Civil Liberties Association of BC.
Oh, no, I understand so, like, no, but, how terrible so, it is, yeah.
But there she had a very prominent position and she said burn it all down. She isn't just some person on Twitter, but she's lost her job now.
Well, there's gravitas for her saying that.
Yeah, it's sort of like Swanson, should you do that when you're, should you get recalled if you do something? So I think once you're in the political game and you're in that sphere, there's a different set of requirements of your decorum and how you express yourself probably. And so I'm not in favor of someone just be mobbed and canceled and thrown out, but I think it needed to be considered whether somebody who's going to be the head of the sitting on Vancouver City Council should be trafficking in drugs, or whether someone who's at the head of the BC Civil Liberties Association should be saying things that are quite inciting.
Yeah.
Burn it all down. I know she probably meant something more figurative than that. I really do believe that she's a good human being, and she probably didn't mean to say go light matches everywhere, but it was a really bad thing to say in the middle of wildfires, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you couldn't pick the worst words, right? So, yeah, she, the thing is that if, you know, you could be dealing with, you could be dealing with somebody who, and this is probably not accurate, but just hypothetically, maybe she had somebody who did something to her when she was younger.
Yes.
Right. And that's an electric shock for her. And she just goes and says, burn it all down. You know, maybe she was Catholic.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, I mean, the problem is we can't do all this stuff. I think it's the net of this, right? She shouldn't be saying stuff like that. And that's an irresponsibility of her position.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the same as the general public saying burn it all down. There's people saying burn it all down all day long on Twitter.
Yeah.
For everything.
Yeah.
But she has a responsibility to not say that, no different than a teacher saying the wrong word in a classroom.
Yeah.
I mean, it just goes with the job. So that, but the thing is, it shouldn't be, hey, everyone says you're canceled. Like, that should, we need to like separate the, that was inappropriate. You need to go in front of a panel and understand what you did wrong. We want to get your perspective. If you would like to try and take on the public and apologize, you have the opportunity to do it. If they still say no, that's fine.
I think that's the best way to do it.
Right.
Like even in clubs, if you breach the rules and you do something, you can be paraded in front of the executive committee or whatever, and you're going to be told, you know what, your behavior was way offside. You're out.
Right.
You're out. And that's a form of canceling, but you sort of ask yourself, well, but we all know what cancellation is meaning these days. It means you're absolutely rubbed out. Like you're vaporized.
Yeah.
You lose your job. And often you're just a small person just going along. And it's not always a big person they nail. But they're trying to make a point to the corporation. You're going to get rid of all these people and you're going to start doing what we say. And we're going to come after you. And I think that's the part that's scary about cancel culture. I mean, remember when Sinead O'Connor tore up the picture of the Pope mm-hmm. on the...
Yeah, I do, yeah.
She basically got canceled after that. Never to be really...
She's not around anymore, right?
She's alive and everything. But
she is?
Yeah, she's been in and out of some... I was just reading about her the other day. Such a brilliant artist. I love her music so much. And I adored Sinead O'Connor and...
What was the Cranberries girl I was thinking of?
Oh, that was Dolores O'Riordan.
Yeah,
O'Riordan. She committed suicide last year, I believe.
Both great voices.
Both, phenomenal. So, you know, but that was a sort of an effect of cancellation. It just became so radioactive. And you know, there have been instances where these things have happened. But you know what? I loved the quote from, maybe this is how we'll wrap up, but Roger Daltrey, the frontman for The Who,
yeah,
came out and said recently, like, these young people are creating a miserable future for themselves. And he's right.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I mean, we're on our way. Like, I'm, you know, past middle age and I'm moving on.
Yeah.
We had a great time. You couldn't even write the lyrics in most of those Led Zeppelin songs now without being called toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Like, this is really becoming an unpleasant, like, it's no fun.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think Daltrey nailed it. You're creating a miserable future for yourselves.
I love that.
And if you go around being offended by everything, good grief. That's what he said. You're going to be offended by everything.
Well,
why don't you just say crackers to that? And I don't, whatever, that's what you think, but let's keep having a beer and, right?
Well, let's just cap this off by, I think you and I are trying to not let that happen and make everything better. So, you know, you don't have a mean bone in your body, neither do I.
No.
And if anybody listens to this and thinks we're off our rocker, let's have a conversation.
Yeah. Phone up and tell us. Be great if we could take some calls, eh? Someday.
That'd be amazing, yeah.
You know, have some people call in and say, I think you guys are really wrong to say that, and then listen to them, because I would like to hear. If I'm tone deaf on something, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, so would I, yeah.
I mean, I really do. Every human being in this world has a blind spot, or many blind spots. And that's due to our upbringing, our background, and so on. And so exposure to other viewpoints is super important. But I like listening to different points of view. Some of my favorite classes in university were listening to the theories of the left-wing political thinkers. It was fascinating to me.
Well,
you have to learn.
Yeah, at least those weren't fake.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to discern what's real and what's not. Okay, Dallas. This was awesome.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
Hit that subscribe button for the latest episode of The Social Ramp. Peace out.